This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I'm your underwhelmed host for this evening.
Okay, well, I am Sarah Shacken. I guess that makes me your whelmed host for this evening.
I came in a little early because I'm overwhelmed. And my name is Zach Valenti.
You're not going to pick it up. It's just you're overwhelmed.
That's how we do at No Bad Ideas.
Welcome all to the game where each one of us brings a terrible idea that humanity produced at some point in its checkered history decisions. And then the other two, after being suitably horrified, have just 10 minutes to figure out how to turn it into the pitch for a good story. Zach, Sarah, how are you guys feeling? Are you guys ready to...
Previously stated, I am whelmed.
You guys ready to spin some gold out of some bad ideas shit?
Yes.
Yes.
That seems...
I was going to say I'm pumped, but spinning
shit... But then
we'll
have discovered alchemy, yes. So we'll be set. I'm ready.
All right. Are you guys ready to go into our first bad idea for today?
Mm-hmm. One second, I'm putting on my gloves.
Nice.
What do you got for us?
All right. So from all the way from the archives, this is an article from the weekend edition of NPR, all the way back from 2016.
We were so young.
Yes, we did not know better. Dear listeners, if you would like to read along, you will find links to the articles in the episode description. So here we go. The headline reads, Art of Breakups. Museum enshrines relics of relationships past.
What?
So.
Oh my gosh.
Throat clearing. Ever wondered what to do with that special memento from a past relationship? That token that's just too challenging to toss, not feasible to return, but yet too painful to hold on to? And no, we're not talking about your broken heart, although we would all relish a quick fix for such. While emotional fallout might be the thing we most often wish to be rid of after a relationship has ended, the tangibles, those bits and pieces of a life built together, can also make it challenging to let go and move on. Now you can donate those trinkets of failed love to a museum. The Museum of Broken Relationships, to be precise. The new museum is set to open in Los Angeles.
Of course.
And they're currently in the process of building their collection. Alexis Hyde is the museum's director.
Also a great name.
I know, right?
Perfect for this. Continue.
And she says that they're accepting submissions from persons overcoming any type of broken relationships. Quote, we're talking about all relationships, Hyde tells NPR Lourdes Garcia Navarro. It is lovers and it is romantic, but it's also your family, your friends, maybe business relationships, or even like with your country. I even got submissions from someone breaking up with your younger, more idealistic self.
Wow. What do they have to give? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like sort of like old diaries, lists of like New Year's resolutions.
You know, some
the failed Tony Hawk gives their old skateboard.
Yeah, right. Broken promises.
Yeah. Or, you know. Favorite book that now you feel bad about liking or something.
The brokenhearted have been submitting a potpourri of souvenirs ranging from, quote, ratty t-shirts to photo albums and pieces of jewelry. These are usually items of not very much physical value, but the kind of things that people talk about saving in a fire that can't be replaced. Things with a lot of emotional heaviness to them, Hyde says. The museum will also showcase a permanent collection where some more valuable items will be on display. A few wedding rings, wedding dresses, and so on. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to the salient detail here. Some might argue it's unhealthy to immortalize something from a failed relationship, and that donating to the Museum of Broken Relationships might not be a good idea. Quote, it's definitely a double-edged situation. I think in giving us your objects, you're moving on. You're actually physically cutting ties with that, and it does provide catharsis.
Does it?
However, it must be noted that there already exists a Museum of Broken Relationships in Zagreb, Croatia. This one opened in 2010, and it's affiliated with this new one.
I love that it's the 20-teens that this is a thing for. This feels appropriate.
That's amazing.
As for the chosen hometown for the museum, Hyde says it's because it's a city of dreamers where many are open to new ideas, especially when it comes to art and community. Quote, people come here with all these amazing dreams and goals, and it's also a land of crushing defeat. Not all of these things work out, and everyone's like, Los Angeles is perfect.
Who hurt you, Alexis?
I know.
Who hurt you?
L.A.
La La Land.
So whatever the source of your broken heart, Hyde is encouraging you to preserve it for posterity, to preserve for posterity that keepsake of your relationship by donating it to the Museum of Broken Relationships. But she's pleading that unlike the, quote, symbol of undying love that one woman submitted, please don't send her another vial of blood.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who does?
Don't ask.
All right. So, museum for all those objects of failed relationships, all kinds of failed relationships.
All kinds.
Opened in the city of dreamers. 10 minutes on the clock, starting now.
I have a pitch.
Okay, I'm glad you do, because I was just going to dwell on, like, the actual thing for a while.
It's very dark.
Please.
And
for the Museum of Broken Hearts, Zach, dark, you say? Come on.
I mean, I just imagine they got the rights to that one Beatles song.
Which one?
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts. Oh, and they just, like, keep that, like, chipper song playing on repeat. But, okay, so here's what I'm thinking.
What are you thinking?
Instead of things, it's memories. So it's, like, basically the initial setup of the... Eternal Sunshine movie.
Mm-hmm.
Except, here's the twist. You get to get rid of your memories, but instead of paying money, you get paid. Because those memories are then part of like a Netflix style rent a experience. Just like, where are they getting all the content for the future? Sort of plug into a VR experience now.
And like, say like, you know, I donate a memory. And then for every person that buys it, the museum gets half of it and I get like half of the charge or something like
that. Sure. Like you get
probably you'd get a slimmer commission than
right,
that.
Right, right. I think probably closer
to the future, but not that much.
Closer to music streaming on Spotify, you probably get a couple pennies.
Oh, no.
Play.
Oh, man.
And probably this startup goes under because who wants to relive the worst moments of. But then there's also the good moments.
Right. You'd have to do the Eternal Sunshine thing of like, all of the memories of this person go. So then they could sort through and figure out which ones they would want to curate. Because if it's just like the painful moment of the breakup, they're either preserving that for science, like it's not an entertainment.
Right. Or it's for the masochists VR users.
I think that if you're going to go with something like this, where it is they are collecting memories to put on display, it needs to kind of not just be about failed relationships. It needs to kind of be about sort of anyone that is like, I had this wild experience. And now instead of holding on to it, I want to put it up for experience.
Yeah, and make some money off of it.
And I imagine that sort of people that say like want to know what it's like to be in one of those like shark cages where you have like
or
the great white sharks all around.
Or,
exactly.
Yeah, you know.
Sort of these like thrill seeking things. But you're like, I don't actually want to jump off the airplane.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you happen to have one of those memories, you might be able to make a pretty chunk of change if you put it up for sale at Memories Are Us or whatever
it is
called.
Yeah. I was thinking I was going to go sort of keep it in like the physical objects land.
Yeah, please.
And was thinking that someone discovers what something that they gave to like a friend or a colleague in the Museum of Broken Hearts or whatever it's called, and then sort of has to trace like why that person,
right?
Like, how did it get there? And it can be sort of like it could be, you know, sort of a funny thing of like a shitty person trying to make amends with a series of people as they road trip, you know, back from LA to New York or something. Or it could be like a very earnest or genuine kind of a story of like investigating why this relationship didn't work.
You could even combine the two, where one day one person is going to the memory museum and they're just kind of, you know, browsing a couple of different things. And all of a sudden they put the, you know, memory helmet on.
And they see themselves.
And they see themselves. And it's a memory that they don't have anymore. And they're, you know, they're like on a date with someone that like they don't recognize. And it's all of a sudden kind of like, wait a minute. Who is this? Why am I here?
What is
happening?
I think it would have to be like...
Wait, what do you mean they see...
I think it would have to be like if they see themselves in the memory, then it's someone that they know who's given this memory up.
Sure.
Right.
And then they have to figure out sort of like, okay, why?
Uh-huh.
What was it about like this day that
made it
expendable?
Yes, that's interesting. Or too painful to keep, alternatively.
Right, alternatively.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I dig it. We can do... Because that way, the bulk of the like you have this sort of sci-fi conceit of this we can call it a memory palace.
All right, I hate this now.
I'm sorry.
Man,
I'm sorry to Nate DeMio.
But
most of it will take place in like the present day.
Sure. So then I guess I'm just trying to get my head around why don't we talk about the protagonist and maybe the relationship that is, you know, driving this what's the word,
arc,
but the search, I feel.
Sure.
So,
well, I guess the first question is, do we want it to be a romantic relationship or not?
That's a good question. I feel like the challenge of it not being romantic, but I also feel like there's nothing that drives the tension like the romance. So it just for audiences at some level, but
sure.
I don't know. It sort of depends on whether we're going for like AMC debut or IFC. do you have a,
I don't necessarily have a sense of who this person is. Because I think we need to figure out sort of what the memory is and why it would be important to them.
In the spirit of jumping off from the idea, let's keep it romantic.
Sure.
Just to have a non-moving goalpost.
Yeah, and I think that, like, you know, the core of this idea of, you know, both of you guys are familiar with Chuck Klosterman's Hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Which
is a sort of card game for anyone that hasn't run
wonderful
into this wonderful
for
product.
Long road trips.
Very good, yes. That are sort of these very kind of larger than life hypothetical situations that are all these things that are like, if somebody challenged you to go fight on the moon, would you go fight to the moon with this person? But I remember that there's one, and I might not be getting all the details of this exactly right, but that basically kind of amounted to you wake up one day in a hospital.
I know the one
and,
you're talking about.
Yeah, and sort of like your friends and family kind of tell you, hey, listen, like you were just in a car crash. You injured your head. You're fine now, but it seems that you're not going to remember the last 2 years of your life. And you're kind of like, oh, shit. And then they sort of tell you like, oh, and by the way, like you were in this car crash with
this person,
that you had become very close to about a year and a half ago. And you shared sort of this like very real, meaningful connection with them. And you were more or less inseparable. And there might even,
have
according
been,
to some people, there may have, well, maybe
it
was
a romance thing. We don't know. That was between the two of you. But now you don't remember this person.
Right. And now they died in that car crash. And after the car crash, you were in a coma for like a month. So the funeral happened and, you know, everyone has already
kind of
come and gone.
Yeah.
And this person is now gone. And again, from your perspective, you
never
met this person. You see a photo of the two of you together and you're like, that looks like a fun day that I had hanging out with a stranger. And the question is sort of like, do you feel sad? Like, do you feel like you lost something? Which I think is a very fascinating question.
It is a fascinating question and perfect for a long car ride.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that it needs to sort of be something of that sort, of kind of somebody who, whether it is because of an accident or because in this world, in the same way that if you can sell memories, I bet it's probably possible to be like memory jacked, like, you know. Yeah. Somebody holds you at gunpoint and is like,
and
you know, put like the last 2 years in this USB and then the last 2 years are gone. And then sort of like in that sort of situation, like, you know, if they kind of like encounter, if they go to sort of like a museum of bad breakups and they suddenly see all these happy memories of them hanging out with another person.
Who they don't remember.
Who they don't remember anymore. Yeah. It might also be interesting if they're sort of with their friends and their friends are like, we've never seen that person in our life, which kind of suggests like, oh, maybe this was a secret relationship. Was this an affair? Was this sort of like someone that this person shouldn't have been with? Why isn't there sort of like any evidence of the two of them elsewhere?
Yeah. Shouldn't there be like physical artifacts of their life together? And there's not. And then, you know, it's I'm trying to think of a good filmic equivalent, and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close is not.
Mm-hmm.
But in that sort of vein where it's just like a series of mysteries following clues to try and perhaps uncover who this person was and what the nature of their relationship was.
Right. Sort of kind of like an identity scavenger hunt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's like a little bit Memento-esque.
Kind of, yeah.
That's a better reference point.
Yes.
Now, just so I can get my head around it, are we, when we go into the VR world, seeing the person's partner or seeing the person, like the protagonist, like is the protagonist seeing themselves and trying to make sense of who that partner was that they were with?
They would have to see themselves if it's a first person VR experience, but it could be a different kind of experience.
Or were they memory jacked and they're seeing this partner and then there's like a, you know, a mirror scene where they're like, oh my God, it's me. Wah.
Unfortunately, these are questions for another time.
I had a feeling we might be on fumes.
Yeah.
10 minutes goes by faster than you think.
Once you start to latch onto something that is like really interesting, it just like disappears in the blink of an eye. But no, that was great, you guys.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Sort of hit all of my very particular jam spots of kind of, you know, sad, yes. Memory shenanigans, yes.
Oh no.
Mystery, yes.
Making fun of LA,
yes.
We love you, Los Angeles.
And we'll probably make some more fun of you right after this.
Everyone, breaking in for just a moment with an important announcement here from the three of us. We love doing this show, and we love seeing your reactions to all of the crazy ideas that we find on the internet. There's no shortage of them, but we would like to grow the show and continue to do it and bring more people into this wacky pastime that we're all involved in. So our request for you is this week to share the show, No Bad Ideas, that's what it's called, with someone in your life. Could be a friend, could be a family member, could be a coworker, could be a nemesis, whatever. We would just like to continue to make the show and grow the show. And for that, we kind of do need your help. So please, if you can, share the show. Could be this episode, could be your favorite episode with someone in your life. We promise that there will be more fun episodes to share and more fun things in this episode right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second story for this week's No Bad Ideas, brought to you by myself, your overwhelmed co-host.
Welcome.
I was so excited for a second. Was it brought to us by the letter C? What's going on?
join me and Sarah in quaking in fear as we prepare ourselves for whatever Zach is about to unleash upon us.
Indeed.
Well, you can thank NPR their technology section for this story about how Google Maps leads about 100 drivers into a, quote, muddy mess in Colorado.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
I did the worst of the amateur no bad ideas.
I know.
Errors,
you're timing on
which is taking
that.
A sip of tea as a news headline was read. Okay.
Oh, Lord.
Proceed.
If you at home would like to read along and see some of the outrageous photos, the link will be in show notes along with the others. Drivers with smartphones these days don't often get truly lost thanks to navigation services such as Google Maps. But what happened in Colorado is a reminder that even with new technology, some shortcuts can still go very wrong. That's how nearly 100 drivers wound up in a muddy field, gridlocked earlier this week. One of them, Connie Monsees, described the incident to ABC News Start Here podcast. Monsees said that she was stuck in traffic on the way to pick up her husband at the Denver International Airport. Quote, so I pulled out my Google Maps to see if there's a better way to go, and it told me to take the next exit, and it would be about half the time, said. Mm-hmm. Naturally, she took it, but the road quickly becomes a dirt road. And then there's a photo with a tweet of dozens of drivers were directed down a muddy dirt road in Colorado this weekend, resulting in a backup of nearly 100 cars deep. So why did Google Maps point them there in the first place? Well, let's find out. Quote, I'm following this line of cars, and my thought was, well, there's so many other people going, it must be okay.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite
line
of the article.
Humanity 101.
Monsees told ABC. Animals. I've had that thought.
Yeah, right? Crossing the street on a red light. Yeah, if other people are doing it.
If so many people are in line, it must be for something good.
So I went ahead. But the thing was, it wasn't like you could choose to make a U-turn. Days of rain had created a, quote, muddy mess of a field, she added. Cars after car drove in and got stuck. Monsees had a four-wheel drive, so she could eventually get out of the mud. She even picked up two other stranded people and took them with her. God, what a mess.
Jesus.
But others ended up stuck in the muck for a longer time. She tells the broadcaster that she is not upset with Google. Just disappointed. No. quote, I don't know that it's so much about Google. It's about us that we want so badly for life to be efficient that we try to take shortcuts that aren't really necessary. Responding to the detour snafu, Google said the road was not marked as private. In a statement to NPR, a spokesperson said, we take many factors into account when determining drive routes, including the size of the road and the directness of the route. While we always work to provide the best directions, issues can arise due to unforeseen circumstances, such as when weather conditions affect the quality of roads. The company added that it encourages all drivers to follow local laws, stay attentive, and use their best judgment while driving. And with that, I am excited to set a timer for this muddy mess.
Oh, boy. I need to tread carefully. I do have a friend who works specifically on Google Maps.
Oh. I mean, clearly this wouldn't have been a problem if they'd been using Apple Maps.
Oh, your time has come. Listeners, Gabrielle has been contrary about using
Apple Maps
map
for
app
years.
For years.
Yeah. Purely born out of it is the one that is already on my phone. And I am incredibly stubborn about not putting more apps on my phone than absolutely necessary.
Then absolutely necessary.
Are
we timered yet?
Yes,
I'm ashamed.
A timer.
Zach is like, you are using your time in the worst way possible.
I feel like the way to maybe shape this is to have it be an intention and to have it be driving cars towards like a specific purpose or place, instead of just people getting stranded on a muddy road.
Yeah, I'm sort of, there's a part of me that wants to kind of, you know, almost thinking of it as sort of the, you know, there's sort of like that joke about all Pixar movies are kind of at the end of the day kind of like buddy road movies.
Yeah, a little bit.
turn it into kind of like literally sort of like, you know, Pixar finally makes kind of like their race movie that is kind of, you know, like a group of like motley, wacky racers style kind of drivers all are doing this very convoluted
cross-country race. It's turning in on those DreamWorks movies, Cars, but but I'm with you.
See, I haven't seen those yet. no, I have not seen the most recent one of those, is what I meant by that. And so you could sort of have a dynamic where it's like you have a driver and every driver kind of has like their own autopilot navigator and those can be a characters.
I demand that whoever our protagonist is, their map aide is voiced by Kristen Schaal.
Nice.
That's my one demand.
Right. And so you sort of have like the main character have a autopilot navigator that is a little wonky, a little left
quirky.
Of center, quirky. They kind of want to take the scenic drive that involves some
ravines.
Or,
you know, private road, private to whom?
Private is a very elastic term.
Yeah. We can off-road a little bit.
Yeah. And there is sort of this element of maybe the driver is sort of this young, hopeful kid that is obsessed with winning. And they just want to be first because they need the prize money. They need the prestige. They need whatever
it
is. We
need to tread carefully because this is, I unfortunately have seen all three Cars movies. and this is very close to a couple of them.
I see. Okay, let's see.
But I think we can stick with like that structure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other thing we could do is to put like a little bit of Rat Race into it.
Ooh,
and
okay,
have
yeah.
Just like it not be a drive across country, but a drive for like this chest of money. And it's kind of unclear like where folks need to go.
Rat Race also famously has one of the best ever scenes of people being like, well, these are the directions that were given to us.
So we will
just follow these directions, which famously has Whoopi Goldberg. And I forget who plays her daughter in that movie. Drive off
too.
A cliff after a vengeful squirrel salesman gave them some bad directions. Just because they were like, well, I mean, that woman seemed like she knew what she was talking about. So here we go.
Yep.
You've got 6 minutes.
Great.
And that in that scenario, you have sort of the frustration of his map guide being a little quirky and not necessarily going where he.
No, yeah. here's what you do. You battle Royalit up a notch.
Okay.
Which is that you have 10 drivers, you know, and it needs to be sort of a rat race setup of an eccentric millionaire
has promised
a pot of gold. And it is sort of like in the central location that the 10 drivers are driving to. They all start off in kind of
different places.
And they're converging in the center. But the trick to it is that none of them know exactly where it is. And they've just been giving sort of these like GPSs that are sort of like custom made by the millionaire.
I mean, this could even be a beta test of a multi-billion
dollar. The thing about it is that, like, and it is announced to them that every so often, randomly, the GPS will give you bad advice. And you need to kind of, like, measure
when
it's giving you good advice and when it's giving you bad advice. Because most of the time, it will just take you
the most efficient
route. And you need to do the most efficient route because it is winner take all. Whoever gets there first wins. And so you get sort of a lot of scenes of all these drivers kind of being like, I don't know, like this seems like a pretty steep road. Like, you know, the GPS is like, do it, let's go. And it's like, and they do it and then it's totally fine. And they're like, ooh, okay, wow, for a moment.
Wow, that saved us 45 minutes
Great. That was great,
Smell that money.
Right, but then like, you know, sort of like the other person's kind of like, oh, this seems totally fine. And they go through and there's a flash flood or something, you know.
Jesus.
And then it's kind of like each one of them sort of constantly faced with, do I go the fast route or do I go the safe route in this attempt to kind of get this bag of money?
I like that. And I think that we can even add sort of another twist on it, which is that I want it to not just be like people in cars angsting about whether or not they should trust a piece of technology.
Yeah.
I kind of.
That just sounds like a Thursday afternoon in my life.
I mean, yes. but like maybe, you know, there it's not a GPS. It's like a dispatch.
Okay.
And like they're hooked up with a dispatcher who has been instructed to give them good directions most of the time. But every so often.
Most of the time. Yeah, he's going to throw them a curveball. Right. Yeah. Right. Like it's going to sort of be the series of forking roads. And yes. They're going to have to kind of be like, all right, whoever, you know, left or right. And, you know, whoever's going to be like, left, do it. I promise. It's going to be real good. It's going to be real fast. It's going to be real efficient. And then they kind of have to judge every now and then. Yeah.
And then it becomes maybe even a back and forth of like, hey, Kristen, I will split this money with you if you just give me good directions.
Right.
And do they believe Kristen when she says sure?
Right. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. And there might even sort of be kind of things that are like, you know, drive through. You know, if you take this route, you're going to run into this like parade that this local town is doing.
Right.
But if you do it, we're going to give you $3,000 right now. Like, you know, like win or lose.
You, so like for stunt driving or for like if you decide to like
take on this handicap
and like make up, find a way to make up the time later, we'll give you money. I really like that.
Right.
Because then, you know, you can do the rat race thing of there are a couple characters who decide to drive off a cliff. Or, you know, try and like. Draft behind an ambulance or something like that.
Totally. You know? Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. This is now turning into just like a pitch for a good reality show, though.
Yeah.
We haven't had one of those yet.
This is just like people who produce The Amazing Race. Call us. We have the next stupidly dangerous, questionably ethical thing for you.
So in the last 1 minute and 40 seconds, can we hear a little bit about the, is there a protagonist? Is this totally ensemble?
I think it's an ensemble, right?
It's probably an ensemble. You probably want at least 5 cars, yeah. I would say.
And you could sort of do the rat race thing of there are pairs, a lot of pairs.
Right, yeah. You can have sort of like different units. Like you could sort of have like, you know, 2 siblings.
A parent and
married.
Child.
Yeah, sort of, you know.
Maybe 2 people who are like exes but find themselves pulled into this or something.
And I think that the key is that like, everyone needs to have a very compelling reason to actually want money that is not just greed.
Right.
Like if it is like a father-daughter pair, they're like looking at colleges.
She just got into MIT. But,
and they can't afford it. So they're looking at safety schools.
Right. Like for so some like this would wipe denied. Out the student loan debt that she's staring down.
Exactly. Yeah. Like everyone kind of needs like something like that, but you're like, oh no, that's the husband and wife
have a struggling small business that they want to keep afloat. Like they're all sort of
CBD cupcakes aren't selling.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Just took out a loan on their house.
So what's it called? What's it called?
Ooh.
Don't trust the GPS. I don't know.
Road less traveled.
All right.
No, it needs to be called something smarter than that.
You are here. No.
Recalculating.
I like that one.
That's good.
I like that one. That's good.
That's time.
Awesome.
Very good.
That was very fun. I appreciate the real life nightmarish mess being turned into a delightful family entertainment.
Well, it's time. There needs to be another rat race type movie.
There hasn't been one.
Who would be today's Mr. Bean?
Give me 1 second. No, I'm trying to think.
Who's doing like broad physical comedy? But like,
I think that you could make an argument for like, in a certain way, like Bill Hader and sort of like some of the stuff that he's doing on Barry. No one is really kind of zeroing in on that kind of like silent, hyper expressive comedy that Rowan Atkinson is just like so fucking good at. At least not in my radar.
You could have made an argument for Simon Pegg a little while ago,
maybe,
but I don't know that he's still interested in that.
Yeah. Well, let's have a think about it.
And we'll come back. All right, and we are back for one last crack at a bad idea.
One more time. One more time.
I'm so glad that the two of you are enthusiastic about this. And I hope you're hungry, because I have a story from the New York Times. Worker stole $90,000 in cakes.
No.
And resold them, lawsuit says.
Wow. So you remember like a couple of weeks ago when we did that stuff about like the Faja heist?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is like these guys, like whoever did this heist, just
hold
look at those
cake.
Guys and we're like, yeah, hold my cake.
I mean, yes. And the trick.
Wait, how many millions?
No, thousand.
Thousand.
$90,000.
Still? So I haven't made $90,000, so.
I know. And these are Lady M cakes.
Oh.
The bakery, which has locations around the world, is renowned for its Instagram-friendly meal crepe cakes.
Mm.
That is apparently the key, is Instagram friendliness.
Of course.
I am going to butcher this person's name, so apologies in advance. But as a delivery driver for an upscale bakery favored by celebrity lifestyle gurus, David Ilivingene had access to a warehouse full of some of the most coveted and costly cakes in New York City.
Wow.
The bakery, Lady M Confections, which I just think of Lady Macbeth, so this is just going to be a problem for me. A patisserie with locations around the world, is renowned for its Instagram-friendly meal crepe cakes, an elegant stack of about 20 crepes slathered in fluffy cream and topped with a layer of caramelized sugar. A 9-inch cake can sell up for up to $90 or less when stolen and resold. The authorities have accused Mr. Ilivingene of doing just that. Earlier this year, he was charged with 15 counts of petty larceny, a misdemeanor, and pleaded guilty in July. But a new civil lawsuit filed last week in Queens by the owners of the bakery details the full scope of the heist. Starting last November, Mr. Ilivingene, 32, began swiping close to $90,000 worth of the boutique gâteau. He would take cakes from the company freezers and pass them off to other vendors, taking a bite out of
Lady M's profits.
He was caught on surveillance camera taking cakes on 36 separate occasions over 3 months, according to the lawsuit. On some days, court documents said cameras recorded Mr. Ilivingene loading cakes onto a shipping cart and just carrying them to his car.
Wow.
All told, Lady M has accused Mr. Ilivingene of stealing 1,020 cakes worth $89,250. The company
Damn.
Only learned about the scheme when it found out that, quote, unauthorized resellers, end quote, had been selling the crepe cakes at a discount. When it investigated, they found not only surveillance footage, but discovered that Mr. Ilivingene's phone had logged onto the company's Wi-Fi network on the same day and about the same time as each of the thefts. The
My
lawsuit
God.
Charges. The company is seeking full repayment for the pricey confections.
Also, like, wow, it is getting so hard to crime. Like,
yep. Yep.
I was going to say, yep. You're not going to turn off your Wi-Fi when you're doing.
I wouldn't think about that.
Neither,
yeah,
frankly.
No.
Put your phone in the freezer, guys. The article continues.
Sarah clearly is on top of it.
There's more details in the article, but I will simply conclude that. This gentleman was fired on Valentine's Day.
Ah, very nice, very nice.
That's cool.
So
Good
yes.
Detail.
So man, so it was the an most, inside job. Wow.
Inside job, but the most basic cake heist that I could possibly imagine.
It's really straightforward.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why I was interested in seeing what you guys would do with it as a jumping off point. So I'm going to put 10 minutes on the clock now.
So my first instinct is to kind of have something where it's not even like the guys from like Ocean's 11, but like the guys from something like Snatch or one of those like Guy Ritchie movies, sort of like hardened criminals. And they've been doing jobs for years. And, you know, like they've like knocked over banks. And
right,
they've like,
fed people to pigs.
Yeah.
Like,
and like
these are like hard dudes.
And they've stolen diamonds and drugs and all these things. And then one day, like, you know, one of them shows up at the lair and is like, new heist idea. fucking cakes. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Cakes? Like, no, get out of here.
He's like, no, it'll be a piece of cake. We're getting old, man.
And they shoot him in the knee.
But then while he's in the hospital, they run the numbers and they're like, holy fuck, that idiot is right. Like, you know, like this is actually going to be incredibly profitable. But they're all kind of, but again, it's sort of one of these like
they're hard dudes. So it's how are they going to infiltrate?
Yes.
This very posh cake place.
And they have to IG make themselves over to
That's
me.
Right. They got to totally do it for the gram.
Yeah. Oh, man. One of them has to like build up a fake following as like an Instagram influencer.
That's right. Yeah.
I love it so much.
Oh my God, they get sponsored by Maybelline at some point.
And they're like, I'm not sure we want this. And it's like, it's money, but it feels dirty. You're a criminal. You've literally laundered money before. This is different.
I have to storify my life. I don't like it.
Right, which kind of like takes us back to what is over time become a like classic of no bad ideas, which is the like needlessly macho man. Having to kind of like confront sort of having to do a different and get in touch with a different part of themselves
yes.
in order to kind of achieve their dreams of wealth and actualization and, you know, being perceived of as like the meanest, toughest guy in the yard.
We are all for making fun of toxic masculinity here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Truly our favorite punching bag. But... okay, with sort of that setup, there are a couple of questions to kind of quash. And the beginning is sort of who is the sort of protagonist and who is the lead character in this? Because I'm assuming that it is sort of...
yeah, I think like sort of the Ocean's movies, this would have a center figure who we care about the most, even though it's a team.
Sure. And would they be the person coming up with the idea? Would they be the person that is sort of like coerced into being the like fish out of water in the IG makeover scenario?
Yeah, like learning how to make patisserie and stuff.
Right. Like I love the idea of like a much more muscular George Clooney, also 20 years younger, being forced to, against their will, become a trendy influencer type. But maybe it makes more sense for them to, you know, have to be sort of the more like fast talking sort of like idea person that then gets their more muscle bound friend that would be more out of water.
So my instinct is that they are the planner and they're kind of like the fast talking guy. And they're probably someone that has tried a couple of schemes recently that haven't worked out.
Yeah, they're sort of desperate for cash and a little bit for their reputation back,
yeah.
You know?
And he sort of probably shows up at like the, you know, the Poisoned Apple or whatever, the tavern yeah. where all the scum of New York hang out in this, you know, fictionalized version of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone kind of, and it's not sort of like, Georgie boy, pull up a chair and, you know, what have you got? It's sort of like a lot of them looking at them like, what are you doing here? Like, get the fuck out. And he has to sell them on the scheme.
One more score.
Right. Just sort of, you know, hear me out. This one, I know that thing in Peru didn't go well. And I know that like that thing in Atlantic City was a bust. But this one, it's too big to fail.
It's like Cronuts.
And that then kind of like, you know, lets all the other guys kind of have the simpler sort of, you know, they have to storify their life transformation while he kind of probably has a more intricate sort of evolution to go
right.
through, which I'm not completely sure of what it is.
And it could be as simple as like getting his groove back.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be. Because of the constraints of both the people that he's working with and the sort of different world of robbing from like a really trendy bakery, has to adapt and sort of do things in a different way and sort of change like his style of thieving.
Yeah.
To like fit this fascinating modern age.
And it might be as simple as he needs to figure out a way to be okay with not being the guy in charge, not
yeah.
being like the guy that always has the plan.
Or not being like the guy who goes in and takes the stuff or whatever.
Which is its own version of kind of toxic masculinity, as much as kind of like the guy that is kind of going, I don't put on the apron, you know, like these pecs are too pecky for the apron.
That's funny.
Or whatever it is.
Well, so I'm just imagining, what if the cronies that become
the
Instagram
cronut cronies,
what if they basically become so successful on Instagram that they're like, they have no
they don't need the heist
anymore.
They don't need the heist. And this guy's kind of going, but we have to do it,
because I think that I'm not getting a slice of this.
I think
that can be a beat for sure.
I
think they probably do go through with the heist,
right?
And then I was thinking they do, and the company finds out, and you know, they're sort of put in this position where it's like, we're going to report you to the authorities unless you can come up with, and you know, he's like having to come up with a better solution.
Yeah.
And I'm just imagining that he can use his like network of criminals to basically scale up their production and somehow take advantage of Instagram. Like, I'm wondering if like the real villain can be the social media platform.
No, but I think you're onto something, Zach. I think that you need to get to that Ratatouille place of they have been faking being a bakery for a while. And at the end, they need to come together and actually sort of like, you
like
know,
make a
be
thing.
A bakery, yeah. A sort of, you know, kind of instead of sort of, you know, passing off this stuff and kind of creating the smokescreen of a bakery. They all need to come together and, you know, Vladimir needs to like pound the bread and, you know, Two-Bit Matthews needs to kind of like frost the cupcakes and it needs to be sort of exquisite. And they all kind of need to just like do it like, you know, super, super well and kind of put together all these very dainty confections and have it be works of art. And that is probably sort of the last thing that they need to overcome.
Yeah, it's fine. The ultimate means of self-expression, which is chocolate.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I do really, really like that beat, though, of kind of, you know, the main character, when they're all getting these, like, sponsorship deals, kind of going, guys, we need to go do the crime. And everyone else is sort of going, Georgie, we hear you, but we need to think about our security. Yeah, you know, like, this is a 5-year contract.
And
this
really,
could be, like,
we
you know.
Have responsibility to our audience.
That's funny.
Right, like you know, like they're here for our content and we need to sort of, you know, keep generating it for them.
That's right.
Oh god, that's funny.
We have to be our most authentic selves.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
How much time do we have?
You have 1 minute and 42 seconds.
Okay, so what is this called?
The Cronut Cronies strike again. No.
Hashtag delicious.
No. Give me 1 second. White powder, or like, you know, like trying to think about like, you know, flat, like
flour. Yeah, like components of baking.
No, and like, man, this would be perfect in
the
in
bar can be called the soggy bottom.
No, like but like in Spanish, harina, which is flour, is slang for money. So in Spanish it would be perfect because you can just call it flour. And it covers both sides of it. Dough. Yeah.
I like
that.
Dough works is also
Doughboys.
Yeah. Doughboys.
Doughboys. Oh, I love it.
Oh my god! Wow. Okay. Cool. Is there sort of any active adversary here? I mean, I guess like whoever they're stealing from,
right,
is gonna get wise to them sooner or later.
And probably there's other criminals who are involved in a more traditional score.
Yeah.
And so there's always the risk of they're going to get shown up by this other crew.
Right. That's like robbing banks or something.
Or one of them might be threatening to reveal what they're doing and kind of extorting them. And then they need to kind of take care of this guy. Whoever
right. Because they're exposed because they're influencers now.
Right. Cool. Very good. I'm trying to think about like anything else that we can cover in the
two,
I'm guessing
one.
I'm guessing no.
No.
I
that
am
was a
guessing
good place
no.
to leave it though.
Yeah, no.
That was a fully cooked.
Hey.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, you guys got very fun with that. I dig it.
No, but like it's good. Jesus, these fucking robbery ideas. Like any time that we find one of these, it's sort of, I think, like really comes together because the things that people, Jesus Christ, people, stop stealing weird things. Like, you've stolen so much weird stuff, and we're grateful for it because we then get to kind of make cool stories out of it. But, like, I'm now afraid about what's the next bad idea involving
the
unusual
trending
theft.
Yeah. Well, I guess we will find that out on another episode of the show.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.